Striving for mediocrity in a world of excellence. This is The Chaser Report.
Hello and welcome to The Chaser Report. Dom Knight here. And for this afternoon slash weekend, we thought we'd look back on one of our favourite conversations of this year. From back before we did the special afternoon editions with the longer interviews, Charles Firth and I sat down with John Safran, one of our favourite comedians and satirists, an all-round brilliant guy. Talk about his book Puff Piece, which came out a few months ago. It's about the way that the tobacco industry is reinventing itself and bringing out new fancy gadgets that aren't quite the same as cigarettes as we know them traditionally, but they still have some of the same problems and how they're even trying to rebrand themselves as health conscious. How on earth can a tobacco company be health conscious? You'll have to listen to the episode to find out. It'll begin right after this.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Chaser Report. News you know you can't trust.
When we welcomed John to the show, I pointed out that his publisher had sponsored the podcast recently, but we would have talked to him anyway as long-term fans, etc. And being John Safran, he sniffed out potential corruption.
Well, it sounds like there's going to be like a media watch kind of knockdown of this about
podcast
how...
watch is not a thing,
podcast watch.
Well, I like to think that it's part of the theme that your book has as well, like the compromise that we all have.
Yeah.
You know,
we
accepted money from you to advertise your book.
Yeah.
In the same way that, you know, Philip Morris sort of compromises people, but it's part of life, isn't
it? Well, that was what was so cool about looking at Philip Morris, because it's such a high-stakes example of this, because pretty much anything short of Philip Morris, you can kind of go, well... You know, like really, like I'm really finding it hard to get worked up about how Puff Piece sponsored the Chaser podcast, and now he's being interviewed.
I'm even finding it hard to get you on anyway.
Yeah, I know, but I'm even finding it hard to get worked up that like McDonald's says they've got a healthy meal, because we kind of all know that they don't or whatever. But this Philip Morris in general, and particularly their brand new shenanigan, which no one knows about up until this book, is like such a the most high stakes version of this that it's like hard to kind of go, well, does it really matter that they're continuing to kill 8 million people a year?
That was certainly a surprise for me, was that all the way through the book people are going, why are you so what's your issue with Philip Morris? They're just corporate citizens just trying to make a buck in this difficult world. What is your issue, Safran?
Part of the reason that people think that is because there's just something about cigarettes that it's the most un-zeitgeist issue-sounding issue. It sounds like something from the 1970s or whatever, like, oh, great. Oh, good on you, John. Cigarettes are bad. Small round of applause. Corporations like, oh, God, John, thank God you're here to tell us all this, right? Except even though it's like seems like such an un-zeitgeist issue compared to, like, issues, which of course are important. So I'm not like ragging on people for, you know, like you have issues like Black Lives Matter, you've got things like Me Too, you've got things like trans rights, you've got all these things and they just sound like of the moment issues. Mm. And then you've got cigarettes, which sounds like, it sounds like a 1970s type thing. I say in the book, it seems like the kind of issue, like it's like a yellowing, faded Winfield ad in a women's weekly magazine from the 70s that's like in a box in your garage that you've kind of forgotten about. But here's the thing. It's still the number one health crisis in the world. It's out of 52 million people who die of everything, 8 million die of cigarette-related issues. So those, it's really zeitgeisty for the like the cancer cells kind of like growing in your body.
It
couldn't be more topical for the cancer cells.
Yeah, it's immediate for them. But it is a bizarre, isn't it, that we've spent the past year and a half turning the world upside down to prevent one public health problem while we've forgotten about the other, which has killed, you know, also killed millions.
Yeah, but my particular interest in this, because I'm a sociopath, people would go, hang on, isn't John a sociopath? I don't understand why he cares about, like, public health or whatever. But my entry point to it was more, I was just so confused and curious because I read this full-page ad in the newspaper maybe two World No Tobacco Days ago, because there's a once a year there's a World No Tobacco Day put on by the United Nations. And on the eve of that, Philip Morris took out a full-page ad, and they're saying, oh, we're going to close down as a cigarette company, and we're going to relaunch as a health enterprise, and we're going to be trying to get the 1 billion smokers a year to stop smoking, including all our own customers. And I was like, wow.
That's very impressive. Well, like, done, Philip Morris.
And I
What's
took
your problem with that?
Well, I don't have a problem. I first gave them the benefit of the doubt. I remember reading that paper. I was going, this is so interesting. Is this like when apartheid ended and the government just decided in South Africa, listen, we just have to, we can't do this, and it's all over. So I was open-minded about it all. And then I started poking around, and I realized, I cannot believe it, but Philip Morris, they're the people, they're the Marlboro people, by the way, that I couldn't take what they were saying at face value.
Oh, my God. Really?
So what they're doing, and it's so clever what they're doing, and it's so filled with, and it's also like so 10 steps ahead of us and everyone. And so I'm like running after them, trying to kind of understand all this. So what this is what they say. They've got this, they've been working on a new device. And to make this very complicated thing a bit easier to understand, let's nip this in the bud. This isn't a vape. So they've got this, they've been working on this new device for years, and they're releasing it. And they say it's not a cigarette.
Right.
And
Well, so what is this? Not a vape, not a cigarette. So what is it?
Well, one big thing, the European Union, their parliament, they decided, like, because they don't like cigarettes, and they want to ban all cigarettes, but they've got to start somewhere. So they did, like, this incredible thing last year, which was ban menthol cigarettes all across Europe. So you can't manufacture them and you can't buy them. And they chose menthol because you have to start somewhere, and that's the cigarette that young people who don't yet smoke, and also people who just don't smoke in general, that they're most likely to start with, that because it's nice and smooth on the
minty fresh
throat. Yes, minty fresh, practically a health food. And so anyway, so it's getting banned. It's like, how wild's that all across Europe? So probably the most consequential pushback against cigarettes ever.
That is,
and Philip Morris, they go, okay, fine, cool. Okay, we won't produce menthol cigarettes anymore. We'll go along with it. Good on ya, or whatever. And then they said, oh, by the way, we've got this new product. And God knows it's not a cigarette. And then they show it, and look at this. Look at that. Are you?
So he's holding up a cigarette.
Cylinder that looks exactly... It's kind of like if a cigarette and a tampon had a baby.
So
it's like a short cigarette. It's like a cheap cigarette.
Fun-sized cigarette.
So it's like they say, listen, we've got this new product, and it's tobacco rolled in paper with a filter at one end that you plant between your lips, inhaling nicotine and tobacco into your lungs. But God knows it's not a cigarette. It's a heat stick. A heat stick, right? And you might think, how are they going to get away with this? Like, because you just hold it up to anyone. You don't have to say anything. And they're like,
it looks amazingly cigarette-like.
It's a cigarette. Like, it doesn't look at anything like a vape or anything like that. It's a cigarette, right? And then, but the most amazing thing is that the European Union, even though they had all those, like, wise lawmakers working on this legislation for years to ban menthol cigarettes, they did not factor in what happens is Philip Morris just says, this is a heat stick. It's not a cigarette. And it worked. So menthol cigarettes are banned all across Europe, but they can still sell menthol heat sticks. And I just could not believe that.
And it was galling, wasn't it? Because they actually launched their menthol... It's called IQOS, isn't it?
Yeah.
Their menthol IQOS cigarettes across Europe on the same day,
yes,
that menthol cigarettes were banned.
Yes.
So can we just ask how does that work, though? So you've got that cigarette. What do you do with it?
So this is what they – I mean, I can – oh my God. I've got my heat stick caught in my IQOS. This is like – I feel bad.
Oh, wait a minute. So is that not an IQOS?
No. You see, this is where like part of all their misdirection. Just a sec. Why won't that come out? Hey, can I go off and get a skewer?
IQOS even sounds like iPod or iPhone. They even put an I on the front of it.
Yeah, that's right. So what happens is a heat stick, instead of being lit by a lighter, instead what happens is you've got this little device here and it looks like a spaceman's, an astronaut's pen or something like that. Looks pretty cool. And what you do is, here, I'm holding this up. You insert the heat stick into that, and then you press this, and it heats it up to an incredible degree, the tobacco in the heat stick. So the device is called the IQOS, but it never actually catches a light, according to Philip Morris. They say that even though the heat is creating a discharge that looks like smoke, and at the very least is filled with tobacco and nicotine that you inhale into your lungs, they say because it hasn't caught on fire, therefore it hasn't combusted, therefore, and they say smoke is caused by combustion, therefore this thing that kind of seems a lot like smoke containing nicotine and tobacco that you're inhaling into your lungs isn't technically speaking smoke. Therefore, they use the word, and it's a very clever word, better. They say it's better than a cigarette. And they're very careful with that because, like, better's not safer or healthier, is it? Or less risky, really.
You can't sue over better, can you?
Yeah, it's better. So, but the way they present it, the way your ears are going to take it, is that this is safer or healthier than a cigarette. But the way I just explained this to you is not the way Philip Morris would. And it just shows their ingenious misdirection at every step of the way. Because I introduced a whole heat stick to you. I said, here's a heat stick. It looks like a cigarette. They kind of parked that to one side. And they like to talk about the IQOS, which is this metallic-looking device that heats the cigarette. So therefore, already you're kind of not looking at the thing that looks exactly like a cigarette. And they're discussing the technology of it and how it heats and how you plug it in. It's got a little light and everything. So that's like the first major misdirection. They're sort of making out this is the thing, the IQOS, when really, no, this is the thing, the heat stick. But they're just like, oh, yeah, anyway, you just stick this kind of tobacco unit in like that. And so because they don't want you to, like, concentrate on the heat stick. They want you to concentrate on this thing called the IQOS, which just makes it even more confusing because you plug this IQOS into a wall to charge it. So therefore, I guess it's an e-cigarette, an electronic cigarette. And then you've also got vapes that you plug into a wall. So I guess they're an e-cigarette. So suddenly you've got this e-cigarette thing, even though a vape and a heat stick are very different in the most consequential way, which isn't saying that there's not questions to be asked or dangers or even worse with vapes. I'm just saying that this is all part of the confusion that Philip Morris manages to leverage or whatever. So this is why this and a vape are so meaningfully different, is because in a conventional cigarette, they contain tobacco leaf, and tobacco leaf generates tar. And tar is the thing that kills you. It's like the main danger in a cigarette.
Right.
Whilst a vape doesn't contain tobacco leaf, therefore it doesn't generate tar. Therefore, people who support vaping, they can say, and it's totally the truth, they can say the most dangerous thing in a cigarette, tar, isn't in a vape. But in a heat stick, there's tobacco and therefore there's tar.
But they don't call it tar anymore, do they?
No. Everything's because we kind of hear it and we don't really ruminate over it. This whole thing of like, oh, language is so important and you can manipulate people with language. But this is like the most high stakes modern example of of doing this and the consequences of doing this, of sort of like changing words and evaporating meaning out of words. So first of all, this isn't a cigarette for some reason. Then on top of that, they say it's not generating smoke, it's generating aerosol. And all this stuff I just went along with because, like, what do I know, right? And then one day I'm just looking up the dictionary. I'm going, well, what is aerosol actually? Because I don't know anything. And I look at aerosol, it gives its definition, and then it's giving examples of aerosols, and one of them is smoke. So the fact that it's an aerosol doesn't necessarily mean it's not also smoke. But that's controversial. Oh, not controversial, that's complicated. But
well,
then
it's ironic,
top,
given that aerosols are the thing that we now all fear because of COVID. But anyway, that's a whole other thing.
And then the other thing is, if you go and you want to research into this because, and you know that it's tar that is the deadly thing in a cigarette, and then even years after, like Philip Morris was taken to court because this is the olden days, because they were promoting low-tar cigarettes as being a better alternative and healthier, and then the courts found, and Philip Morris had to concede it, that no, tar's just bad, whether it's low-tar or regular tar, and low-tar, so tar is the deadly thing in a cigarette. So then you look at the ingredients in this, and there's no tar in it, right? And that's because they've changed the word to tar, from tar, they've changed it to nicotine-free dry particulate matter. So if you're looking at the... And they're so clever at it that I was reading this in either a science or a medical journal, and these scientists, and they hate Philip Morris. They're trying to take down Philip Morris and take down the heat stick and the IQOS. And even they got duped by this and confused by this new word for tar, nicotine-free dry particulate matter. But it's even like, this is how clever they are, because I was always being suckered in, and then it's like I'm driving my car 3 weeks later and realized, damn, they got me again. And this is how good they are. Even though I was writing a book all about this, trying to expose all the trickery, after the book was published, so what I'm saying now is not in the book, I'm driving along and I'm going, oh my God, they got me on another thing that I didn't notice. And what it was is that, just look how audacious they are. Not only did they change the word tar to nicotine-free dry particulate matter, they put in the expression in that nicotine-free. So, but they don't deny that there's nicotine in a heat stick as there is in a cigarette.
It's just not in the particulate matter.
Yeah, so they've taken the most infamous nicotine product in the world and they've isolated the bit of the nicotine product that doesn't have the nicotine in it, and then they stamp on the expression nicotine-free. So now when they're talking about the heat stick and the IQOS, they can use the expression nicotine-free, even though it's a cigarette and the most infamous nicotine product on the planet. Very clever. Or maybe I'm just very stupid, who knows?
Oh my God. So is this going to work? I mean, they've got all these fancy plans and whatever. Is this going to mean that people still smoke but just with these far more expensive? Because this reminds me of the whole thing of with inkjet printers where you get the printer cheaply but then you've got to pay for the cartridges. Is this another situation like that? Have they won through the IQOS?
Well, they're on their way to winning. It's hard to tell if they have won because you can't – you know there's that joke. I think it's the start of a book or something, and it's like, hello, she lied. And it's like with Philip Morris – everything they say is like, you don't even get to through the hello. It's like, huh, they lied. It's like everything they say, you can't take at face value. And one of the things you can't even take on face value is because they promote how this has been quite successful in countries like Japan. But like, for instance, they say about Japan, they go, since we've introduced the heat stick and the IQOS, 30% of smokers in Japan or something like that, they've moved on to heat sticks, but there's been shareholders who have started legal action against Philip Morris saying, you misled us. We don't think that's actually true. You've like overhyped it to try to, you know, get us to buy your shares, and we don't actually believe it. So it's like, it's very difficult to work out how successful this is so far, but it is successful in that they've laid the groundwork for getting around the menthol cigarette ban in Europe. And now they've laid the groundwork in a similar sense in America, because there's major parts of America where I think, I don't know if it's gone ahead yet, but in California, is it California? I don't know where it is. Let's just, anyway, one major state in America, they've proposed to ban menthol cigarettes, and they either have or they haven't, but it's the same thing. They've managed to kind of wiggle around and lay the groundwork that when cigarettes are banned, they're going to be able to say, da-da, look at this. This isn't a cigarette. So they have been that really successful. And also, right. The other thing I learned is that, I don't know how to tell you this, guys, but I think us in our little arty community, I think we might live in a bubble. and I think we might see the world through a certain lens, and other people in other bubbles see it through different lenses. So one of the things that really struck me is I bought shares in Philip Morris.
Oh, wow.
Which meant I could get access. So, which meant I could get access to their shareholders meetings and things, and because of COVID and everything, they're happening on conference calls and everything. And it really struck me straight away that because the people in Philip Morris, when they're talking to the shareholders, you know, they really have to sell the story of how successful it is, and we've got this much more profit, this much more sales and everything. And I just thought, like, we live in this bubble where, like, Twitter's everything, and being dissed on Twitter and being told you're bad on Twitter is like, that's the worst thing that could happen or whatever. So we might think that that's what everyone's consideration is. But if you're like work for Philip Morris, what you're really scared senseless of is going to these shareholder meetings and having to say, oh yeah, this hasn't worked, or we haven't sold as many. And so Philip Morris are just like desperate. Like, they don't, there's a limit to how much they care that people are saying that they're jerks and they're killing people, because what they're really worried about is not that they're going to be dissed on Twitter. They're worried that they're going to upset the shareholders. And that's also part of the reason for the IQOS, and one of the reasons why it can have a slow build and it's still very successful, because they have to tell the shareholders a story of why they're going to still be around in 5 years, right. 10 years, 15 years, when it seems like the world is against cigarettes, you know, they're being banned everywhere. And so IQOS is part of a storytelling campaign to their shareholders of, we've got you. We're looking to the future. We've got something here for when cigarettes are banned. So, yeah, it's been remarkably successful in that sense too. And the other way it's really successful is, because lots of people don't like cigarettes. And so, for instance, they're finding it hard to even hire top-notch people, because people don't want to work in a product like this, because it's like, what do you tell your friends at dinner parties that you work for a cigarette company? So this is how ingenious they are. Because they've got this product which looks like a cigarette, but they say isn't a cigarette, and they say this is our future, this is our flagship product, and we want this, we want our conventional cigarette business to die off and be replaced with this. They get to tell a story to themselves and to their staff that you're not working for a cigarette company. You're working for a company that's trying to end cigarettes and move people on to this better, healthier, like better alternative. And so that's another like ingenious way that, like, just playing with words, you can just bend the world to like this totally new reality. And because I met people from Philip Morris, and they're total believers. They're not like, see, I'm sure like there's all sorts of layers of people. So there are people who are just like, oh yeah, we know we're bullshitting people. But you have like younger people working for Philip Morris, and they really see this, as strange as it might sound to us on outside their bubble, they really think this is like a social justice thing, where it's like cigarettes kill people. We've got to get people off cigarettes. And this is going to help people. And the people of Philip Morris, as crazy as it sounds, they see themselves in some ways in the same world as like Quitwick Victoria or the World Health Organization is trying to get people off cigarettes, because they're saying we are another organ of society that's trying to get people off cigarettes, just like the Quit Victoria people. And then it gets even insaner than that, where they say that they're actually better than the Quit Victoria people, because Quit Victoria and groups like that and whatever the different states and different countries, their version of Quit Victoria is, they say they're being unrealistic. They're demanding people, they're letting people die, Quit Victoria, because they're just saying quit cigarettes totally or just continue smoking. And people aren't just going to quit cigarettes, so they're going to continue to smoke. So Quit Victoria is actually like a bad, because they're not giving people these sort of like baby step options like the heat stick and the IQOS. So they sincerely, there's people in Philip Morris, they sincerely think not only are they in the anti-cigarette business, but they're better than the people from Quit Victoria.
But John, you know, in some ways your book launches the IQOS in Australia.
I know. It's kind of, I had to write this book because, like, I had to be the person, because I'm the person who's like such a sociopath and so attracted to the tangles and so on, to sort of like dive into the tangles, that I love all the stuff that I have to do to get the story. So if I was like working for Four Corners, it's like I can't buy shares in Philip Morris just so I can like weasel into the thing. Like that's problematic. But for me, not only is it, maybe it is problematic, it's like I love it. I love that I have to I have to put myself into these situations, and I have to do things that you're not meant to do to get the story. I mean, the other big thing that
part of the delight of the book, John, is your description of that journey and the compromises that you make along the way. Like it's such a rollicking tale, especially when Philip Morris actually offers you a free trip to Switzerland.
Yep. So that was like, yeah, that's why I'm so good. This is why I'm the man for this job, because anyone else would either try to hide
willing
it.
To compromise.
Yeah, everyone would either like compromise and hide it. Well, they probably would, or they'd just be going, I have to get this story some other way besides accepting a bribe from Philip Morris. I shouldn't say bribe, accepting a junket from Philip Morris. And whilst I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe how lucky I am. I'm working on this book and I'm going to get a junket, which just makes the story so much more confusing and is going to mess with the reader's head. And they're going to be going, oh my God, I can't believe John's doing this. I'm so confused. Is John bad for doing this? And because I'm just such because my dedication is like being a storyteller as opposed to being a, I don't know what, an activist or a journalist or whatever, like or even an op-ed. I just love it. I could not believe my luck when I was like writing this book about how Philip Morris kind of used their money to manipulate people and try to bend their story all the way. And then when it ends up that they, you know, they take me out to lunch and try to do it to me. I couldn't believe it. And like, imagine, then what happened was, unfortunately, obviously for the world, COVID and then lockdown, which meant I definitely accepted this compromising thing of the junket, but then I couldn't go because we were in lockdown. We couldn't go in lockdown or whatever. So, but then afterwards I was thinking, cause again, I'm just so driven by the whole storyteller thing. And so afterwards I was thinking, cause anyone else would think, oh, that's a bummer, because it would have been great to go to Switzerland and get to the Philip Morris factory or whatever. Right. But then I was thinking to myself, just say they said, oh yes, you can come to Switzerland. But I'd done it on my own bat. You know what I mean? Like I just got bought the ticket myself and went there or whatever, and got into the Philip Morris headquarters or whatever. That's not half as awesome as being offered the junket and accepting the junket. Like that's the killer. Yes.
You've already compromised. Like, that's a solid
gold. That's a solid gold material. And I'm like so much happier that I was given a junket and accepted the junket. And didn't end up in the headquarters in Switzerland. Rather than I would have ended up in the headquarters in Switzerland, but like in a kind of journalistically ethical way.
You're accidentally ethical.
Mm. Yes.
Yes.
No. I think it's the opposite though, because you accepted the junket. You were completely compromised, but you didn't get the benefit of the compromise.
I know. It was even worse. Like the stuff that, because there was so much material, like. I you just can't put everything in the book. But I promise you, I'm not hiding it. If there was anything worse, I absolutely would have put it in the book. But it was really funny how after the junket was offered, like the conversations I was having with friends, like, because no one was like, how very dare you? Everyone was like, yeah, so they, what do you reckon? Do you reckon it's going to be like a first class flight? Or are they just going to put you, or are they going to put you in economy?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
None of the medical advice contained in the Chaser Report should legally be considered medical advice. The Chaser Report.
But John, without wanting to spoil the end of the book, you actually end up with a bit of a scoop.
Oh yeah, that was pretty amazing. Like scoop, you mean like it's like front page of the Age scoop.
Yes, totally. Like, because it actually goes into the heart of, without wanting to reveal exactly. It's about how Philip Morris actually orchestrated things in the political system in Australia.
Yeah, like some stuff that's like never been revealed before. So it's not, I was so excited.
But to do that, get that scoop, you sort of betrayed a kind of friend slash contact.
Yeah, I know.
And it was all sort of accidental as well. You didn't even mean to do
it. But don't call it betrayal. Call it friendship 2.0 or iFriendship.
Well, yeah, to be fair,
just rename it.
To be fair to me, like, it wasn't my fault. And also, the person who I quote-unquote betrayed, like they were very high up in an organisation, so it wasn't like I was kicking a puppy or whatever. And also, it was totally newsworthy and everything like that. But
What's his reaction been, can you say?
I know that he likes the book.
Right. Yeah.
It's very because hard
I, because I think it's a sympathetic betrayal of him.
Yeah, and it kind of doesn't make him look bad or anything like that. It just makes me look. Well, it doesn't make me look bad either. It's just like a thing. But it'll be very interesting because it's early days. Like the book hasn't been out for even a week, and I'm not that cocky that I don't think there's not going to be some sort of blowback. Like which I can't. I don't even know what to expect.
And how hard was the legaling on it? Like, was there a lot of legaling?
I got pre-briefed before I went out on my adventure, and usually because it's my third book with Penguin, and usually Penguin just like I go off and you know that like they you know I give them the idea and they might like it or not and you know toss up a few other ideas, but then once we agree on the idea, then I just sort of pack my backpack and go off on my adventure.
Go and see Father Bob.
Go see Father Bob. Go hang around in the forest in Mississippi. Go do tequila shots with neo-Nazis, depending on what the book is. And then, like, I come back, whatever it is, 12 months later, and I'm all scratched and dirty. And then I hand in the manuscript, and then that's when we start looking at the legals. But then with this, there was, like, this is the first book where there was, like, a pre-meeting about do's and don'ts, obviously because it's, like, a big corporation. But then
Philip Morris litigious? No.
But then very fortunately, because I was so ethical and and so on and so forth, it was actually a lot smoother than a person might expect. And also, whenever I get in kind of like legal, I have legal issues with my work, it's always so anticlimactic or at the very least not what a person would think they would be. So, for instance, Like my TV shows where I'm doing like all this outrageous stuff, what the legal note will be, it's like, when I go undercover, when I send people undercover pretending to be Slipknot so they can get into a nightclub or whatever, then the thing isn't that, oh, you falsely impersonated Slipknot, and it's not that, oh, you filmed this in this nightclub and they didn't give you permission or anything like that. Or it's never anything like
that.
It's
sounds
like,
familiar.
When you showed the Slipknot album cover on screen, It was for about 7 seconds, and that goes over the copyright acceptable use quota. So we're wondering if you could carve off 2 of the seconds and only show the Slipknot album cover on for 5 seconds, not 7. So it's always like something like that. And same with this book. I think people would be surprised that everything was pretty smooth sailing, and there was a few legal things, but they just weren't melodramatic things or whatever. So I was very lucky, but partly that was because of the very fine, very good legal briefing by the good people at Penguin Random House.
So if you're listening to this and working out whether to sue, just sue them and not John. That's the tip. It's been fascinating, John. I kind of want to delve down the rabbit hole of vaping just because it's so morally complicated.
Yeah, sure.
I'm really torn about vaping because I'm really against products that hurt people's health, but then I also think adults should be able to do what they want as long as they don't hurt others via passive smoking, which has been the problem with cigarettes per se. You delved into this issue a lot and you met some of the key advocates in the industry. Where did you end up?
So just looking at it from a health perspective, and because the book's so much about Philip Morris, it's sort of like about Philip Morris elbowing their way into the world of vaping more than... Yeah. Like, it's not this really hectoring thing, wagging my finger at vapors or anything like that.
No, that's why I found it so interesting, because they were kind of allies at various points and so on.
Yeah, I mean, that is another reason Philip Morris are introducing this heat stick and this IQOS is because they're at war with vaping, because vaping is going to fill the hole in the marketplace. Yeah. When cigarettes are banned, and so they want to come out with their own thing. And so they're very much in a war against vaping and the vaping industry as much as they're in a war against Quit Victoria. So just looking at purely from a health perspective, and obviously I'm a comedian and you need to listen to scientists and doctors and all that kind of stuff and experts, but this is like a real... general stuff. And one of the things we already covered, but I'll quickly say it again, is like, so the difference between a vape and a heat stick or a vape is that vapes, you are steaming, it's steaming up a juice, and the juice is filled with nicotine and it's got propylene glycerol and it's got flavorings in it, but it doesn't actually have tobacco leaf. And because it doesn't have tobacco leaf, it doesn't generate tar. Tar's the deadly thing in a cigarette. So vapers can say the most deadly thing in a cigarette isn't in a vape. But then... you're still inhaling all that stuff I just said. You're like these propylene glycerol, you're in these flavorings. And so there could be, that's going to have, in all likelihood, going to have like respiratory consequences, even though they might be different to the respiratory consequences of a cigarette. But it's all early days. So there's a lot of people can like cherry pick this and that to support their argument. But this is, so that's what you've got to keep in mind, that it doesn't have that danger of a cigarette of tar, but you're still inhaling things that ideally your body shouldn't, and that could have their own consequences. But the other thing is, I think what makes it a confusing when talking about it from a health perspective is other people reckon, like the National Health Service of the British government. So that... if you're addicted to cigarettes, and I'm only talking purely from a health perspective, not any other perspective. If you're addicted to cigarettes and you spent like 6 months, 9 months, even a year or whatever, weaning yourself off cigarettes using a vape device, and then maybe you lower the nicotine rate as you go along, and then at the end of that 6 months or 9 months or a year, you put to one side both the cigarettes, and you're not smoking the cigarettes anymore, but you're also not vaping anymore. I reckon in that context, there's an argument that it's a tool, it's a public health tool, or it's a tool for helping you out because it's got you off cigarettes. But then if you're just huffing on a vape for all hours, 7 days a week, and you're going to do it for the next 10 years, I reckon that's a pretty big roll of the dice that you're not going to find out that that's going to have respiratory health consequences that could be really dire, because your lungs aren't meant to take in like things like that. Like your lungs aren't even meant to take in like steamed water, for instance, for such a sustained period of time. So that's where I reckon it's a real roll of the dice, and there might be and so people who vape that much, there just might be some bad news that even though the research is early at the moment of Yeah, it could be bad news. And so that's why it becomes confusing as a health argument about whether they're healthy or not, because it's like, kind of like depends how you look at it.
Mm.
And it's all through the high schools as well. Like my son, who's 13,
yeah,
has already, like, several of his friends have been caught in the toilets vaping, and they're in year 7. He's going, oh, God. And every parent knows that the nightmare is going to be everyone's going to vape in high school, and you're just going, oh, this is like, this is just another sort of cigarette thing.
But they're not, marketed to kids with all the candy flavors. No way.
No, exactly.
But I mean, the other confusing thing, and I don't really have a end point to this, but just, it just explains why it's such a confusing matter to talk about, is that nicotine in both a cigarette and also in a vape and also in a heat stick, like the nicotine, the agent that keeps you addicted to the danger, whilst in and of itself, and there's an asterisk after this, but generally speaking, in and of itself, the nicotine isn't the deadly thing. It's not the danger. It's the thing that addicts you to the danger. So then that just becomes so confusing because in the case of the cigarette, the nicotine's addicting you to the danger of the tar, whilst in a vape, the nicotine's addicting you to the danger of whatever the danger of inhaling this steam is. So, nicotine's both the central point and also not the point, depending on how you look at it. So, for instance, if you go to Chemist Warehouse, you can just buy nicotine gum without a prescription. I don't think you even have to be 18. And, like, we live in a pretty strict country in Australia, so clearly the authorities are going, well, it's not nicotine in and of itself, because then therefore how come you're allowed to buy nicotine without a prescription from Chemist Warehouse?
Especially nicotine. when irresponsible people invent new ways to use Nicorette.
Yeah, well, in this book, obviously, I mean, anyone who's familiar with my work will not be surprised to know that as soon as anything was presented to me, from heat stick to vape to cigarettes to whatever, to shisha pipes, I was like, yeah, I'm going to try this. I'm definitely not only am I going to try this, but because I'm a storyteller, I'm kind of secretly hoping I would get addicted to it, because that's going to be better for the story. But and so I, of course,
you've always been your own guinea pig, John.
Yeah, I have. So I got, I started taking nicotine gum, and because it was such a pure form of nicotine, I was sort of like mildly getting addicted to it, I think. I mean, it's really hard to measure these things, but it's like so disgusting. Like it's kind of plain but also disgusting or whatever. And then I had this eureka moment, because I was thinking, because the whole thing with the whole way that vapes are marketed is they're always like fun and flavored. So it's like bubbly custard vape juice and raspberry pie vape juice. And so I was going, oh my God, why don't I do this with this gum that I'm liking, but I don't like the taste, and it's all like, it's just whatever. I'll go, why don't I just like go down to the 7-Eleven? I'll buy like Hubba Bubba, and I'll buy a watermelon extra, and I'll start kind of like blending it myself. And I'll sort of like, and I looked up on the internet, and I'm going, surely someone's thought of this before. And no one had. Well, there was nothing on the internet about it. And it's like, I realized I'd invented this new form of like drug taking, and which I call juicy fruiting. So it's like, where you get a Nicorette or a Nicobate or whatever.
Oh God, are we even allowed to broadcast the method? Oh fuck!
And then you try different ways like of flavoring. So I did it like, is it called like pig in a poke? Is that what it's called? Like where you wrap wrap a bit of watermelon extra around the Nicobate capsule, and you chew on it, and you're like, you're juicy fruiting. So it's like, anyway, I don't want to be irresponsible, so I'll end that story unsatisfactorily here.
Don't try this at home, kids. Oh God. It's such a great story. And, I remember 20 years ago, something like that, they had this amazing article in a thing called The Eye about how they tried to recruit you to host a kids show, and it ended up that it was a cigarette company that was behind the whole thing.
A youth show. I don't think it was quite a kids show. But you're right.
Sorry, it was a youth show.
Amazingly, that story. Oh, yeah, and it ends up being Philip Morris trying to do it.
Yeah,
I know this sounds weird, but because when I'm writing the book, because it's like I mean, you've read enough of the book where it's like this forward propelling thing where... So it just put all these limitations on, like, diversions and, like, it just for, like, writing reasons didn't make sense. So there were things that you just go, my God, how can that not be in the book? And... That story didn't make it in the book, which is just bizarre.
Was it in the pitch of the book?
No, there's other things. Other things in the book. There's in the book about me seeing Philip Morris four wheel drive, like a Melbro, drive into like this little village in West Africa when I was on Race Around the World. And
oh my God,
it's like mud huts and it's all that. No electricity and this bright Marlboro SUV driving in. So I put that in there. Another thing that I put in the thing about how I got taken to court for putting trying to get Shane Warne to smoke because he'd taken up, it was Nicorette, he'd taken up a contract where I think it was worth $1 million, but a lot of money, and to endorse Nicorette. And the one condition was he wasn't allowed to smoke, or definitely not publicly. So this is like one of those things that probably didn't have enough intelligent subtext to it. But, you know, come on, you're the chaser guys. You know, there's half an hour to fill.
We've been down that road.
So even though this didn't really have probably enough, like, intelligent subtext to it, I thought I'd try to lure Shane Warne back into smoking so he could void his Nicorette contract. So one of the things I did is I went down to the MCG when he was playing, and I got a stuffed seagull, and I shoved it on a remote control car and stuck a cigarette between the seagull's lips, and I sent it out onto the field to Shane Warne, and then I was arrested by the police for pitch invasion, and then I was taken to court. It was so humiliating because I've done stuff in my career where there's like some good sort of like, yeah, John stuck it to the system kind of subtext. Like, you know, if I went to court for like the Ray Martin thing, or even like for this film, at least it'd be like, yeah, it's the little guy against the system. But it was like so humiliating having to be in court and like say
seagull.
Anyway, so I put it like a remote control seagull, and all like everyone's sniggering in the court. And so that story's made it to it. This other story, because I couldn't figure out, because I thought it was too anticlimactic and I didn't put it in, and it's only since the book I thought, damn, I could have put that in or whatever, is because I did work experience at an ad agency called Mojo and Partners, and they had the Philip Morris account, but it was like I never worked on it. But I do remember one afternoon the account director for Philip Morris came by our desk and said, oh, listen, we're wondering if you can get some slogans together and some product names together for this new Philip Morris product, because we're going to be testing it with a focus group. And I'll get a brief to you later this afternoon. And then, like, it just didn't happen. It was like one of the dozens of things each week at an ad agency that, like, someone says something and then it doesn't happen. So I didn't put that in the book because I just thought it was, like, anticlimactic. It's like it seemed a bit desperate of me trying to, like, make myself complicit, but now I realize I could have. So anyway, I don't know. Second
edition.
Bottom
line is, Philip Morris is your Moriarty. It's not going to be a second edition. There's going to be another book.
Yeah, I know.
I'm absolutely certain. This battle's going to span for decades.
Yeah. Well, you've got to go to the Cube in Switzerland.
Yeah, I know. I hope I haven't burnt myself with Philip Morris, that they're not going to, like, let me go to the Cube.
They want to win you over, and then they'll offer you a fat contract with the face of the ICOS in Australia.
I hope it makes it to TV, because I was shooting a thing for the project that which they're going to cut together, and I was smoking the ICOS in the things I was doing, because no one knows what the ICOS is, so I have to do that thing where I'm like, I'm basically the New Price is Right model who's sort of like slowly opening that and showing how to put in. So Philip Morris must be happy on that level, because they're totally deplatformed.
You're the spokes
by everyone. They're deplatformed by it. No one wants to talk to them. And one of the interesting things, and it's like it's a bit of a tangle about how Philip Morris aren't getting enough focus on this new product, which there should be a bit of focus, is that the kind of people who would be against this product are also just against vaping. So for instance, Quit Victoria will just go, vaping's awful and blah, blah, you shouldn't do it, and this icon, blah, blah, and you shouldn't do it, and it's all just bundled in together, which is like, that's fine, that's their perspective, but it kind of in this tangled way means Philip Morris is getting away with people not understanding what's going on, whilst Yeah, so, yeah, it'd be pretty cool if I'm the first person to smoke an IQOS on Australian TV.
I'm just imagining an ad, John, where you're at the MCG and you get an IQOS and you put it on a remote control car between the lips of a pigeon and you send it out to Shane Warne and he picks it up and goes, this is better.
Yeah, yeah.
But not safer.
No.
It's a fascinating story, John. Thank you for telling us all about it. And good luck with the addiction.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, and I'll set up a Facebook group or something where we can all juicy fruit and explain all our different methods of juicy fruiting.
Can we invest in it? John Safran's new book is called Puff Piece. It's available everywhere right now.
And on ebook, regular book. That's if you want to use the pages for Rolly. But also audio book with me squeaking, because I know a lot of people like to hear audiobooks, and people miss my show with Father Bob. Father Bob's big in this book, by the way. I do Father Bob's voice, though, so manage your expectations. But, you know, so it's going to fill that emotional hole of, oh, I really miss John squeaking in my ears with his insufferable whining.
So buy it in every format is what I'm hearing. Yeah. Excellent. Thanks, John.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The Chaser Report. Now with extra whispers.
So there you have it, our chat with John Safran. Charles and I enjoyed that enormously. From earlier in the year, as always, our gear is from Rode Microphones and we're part of the Acast Creator Network. And we'll return on Monday morning with a brand new episode for you. Catch you then.